The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this June 18th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. And you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. I don't know what the weather's doing today, and it seems to be an everyday occurrence where it's hot, it's sunny, then it rains, and then it's hot, and then it's sunny a little bit more. And so hope you're doing well on this Wednesday. Lots to get to on the show today, as we told you yesterday. No Daryl Dapperts today, no Double D. We'll pick back up with him next week. He had some things going on, and so we are going to take a break from him this week, but that leaves it wide open for us to go through a lot that is going on in the world of sports, from the College World Series to some college basketball things, maybe even talking a little Major League Baseball today as well. It's a jam-packed show. We'll tell you all about it as we go. But joining me in the studio, as he does every day, my man Christian Griffin. How are you, sir? Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday, man. It just continues to show more and more true that Auburn just ran into a gauntlet.
Coastal's pretty dang good, I would say.
Up 6-0 right now. Had runners on first and second. Did Louisville on the game going on right now, which Louisville would have to beat Coastal Carolina twice.
Yep.
To make their run for the College World Series championship game. But first and second, nobody on. And, of course, Louisville lines into a L4 double play. Auburn is haunted by a couple of those through the past couple of weeks. But, no, really excited to be able to dive into all of that for you here today. You mentioned it, Jacob, a really, really exciting show. A whole lot that we're going to be able to cover. You mentioned the College World Series, some baseball talks in there as well, some national championship odds. Also, Auburn's basketball schedule has been released, or the SEC schedule has been released for the teams that Auburn will be playing home and away. So where will they be going? Who will they be hosting? As there's a couple new names in there with Oklahoma and Texas making a couple really difficult road trips, but also playing some hosts who are some really good teams as well. Really excited to be able to get into all of that here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
Yep, phone lines are open today. They've been wide open and will be throughout the summer, just with a scaled back guest list. So the phone lines are open if you want to come in and be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Give us a call. What's on your mind? Who do you think's going to win the College World Series? We're down to four. Believe it or not, if you haven't been paying attention, we're down to four. It's this game right now between Louisville and Coastal, which, like Christian said, the Cardinals would have to win twice. And then coming up later this evening is Arkansas and LSU. And if you remember, these two teams played in the very first game of the College World Series, or in the first round of the College World Series. And LSU is yet to lose, meaning Arkansas has to win twice. And so your predictions on that, your thoughts on Auburn's basketball opponents, Major League Baseball updates. We got a lot to get to on that later as well. I mean, anything on your mind, give us a call, 334-321-1390. And the text box is always open as well at 334-784-1067. And it's funny because after all of the commotion, after all of the yapping, after all of the poking fun of the SEC, after the conference put 13 teams in the NCAA baseball tournament, only had two get to Omaha, only had two of them get to the College World Series, Christian, it's now guaranteed that the conference will have yet again another shot to win a national title.
Yeah, these are the two favorites going in, and despite all of the controversy of reseeding in Omaha with the two betting favorites having to play each other in the first game, I don't think this comes as much of a surprise that the two best teams arguably in the tournament and from the SEC are going to be playing for a trip to go to the College World Series. They will take on, unless Louisville decides to pull some sort of miracle off, it will be Coastal. And yeah, it was the ACC that had a whole lot of chirping going on in regards to, man, the SEC didn't deserve that many teams. Man, the SEC, what do you mean it just means more? Look what we just did to all of these teams. Well, you're going to have one team, regardless of the outcome, whether that be tonight, whether that be tomorrow, of an SEC team representing the conference for the College World Series. And you don't think that it would be beyond anybody to say that the winner of bracket number two goes on to win the whole thing. I think that Coastal was the third betting favorite, and I think we both kind of predicted that, for it would be LSU and Arkansas competing against Coastal in the College World Series, especially after seeing the question marks turn into exclamation points at Plainsman Park and realizing that this team is a lot more than just a really good pitching staff, but not just a pitching staff for the Sun Belt, but a pitching staff in Division I, Power 4, arguably Major League Professional Baseball. And then we've talked about it for forever of how comfortable this team is doing what they do at the plate. They're not going to hit three or four home runs every single game.
Not supposed to.
But again, they're up 6-0 right now.
And in the third.
In the third inning, and it's just been single, walk, single, double, single, double.
It's small ball, man. They thrive in it.
They're gap to gap. They are line to line in both the right-handed and the left-handed batter's box. If they make their way into the College World Series, it will be so fun to watch. And again, my prediction all along was it was going to be LSU. LSU was my team to win it all. Kate Anderson has worked his way into not only top five, but there have been MLB draft rumors of him going number one overall now. Mm-hmm. And hard to argue the stat lines, hard to argue what he's done in Omaha in the College World Series right now. And it could be an absolutely fascinating pitching matchup if that were to be the case. Arkansas, on the other hand, has to win two over LSU, and it's been their pitching that's primarily gotten them over the hump. Offense woke up a little bit last night, but if it were not for the guys on the mound, you feel like it could be a very different story. You feel like the offense is going to have to wake up for the Razorbacks tonight.
I mean, if Coastal holds on here, which I would assume that they would, but you never know. This Louisville team can play now. I mean, they're in the Final Four right now of the College World Series, and that was my team that I picked at the start of Omaha. If there was an upset to happen, who would it be? Not named LSU or Arkansas. And outside of Coastal, I said Louisville after they proved me wrong in the Super, where they were able to hit around and play enough defense to get through and beat everybody along the way. And I think they've just kind of run out of gas, man. They just don't have what it takes. They don't have the pitching, I don't think, to keep up with Coastal right now, who's got another base runner here in the third inning on a walk. I mean, it's just, it's a different beast with this Coastal Carolina squad. And I think whoever wins, whether it's LSU or Arkansas, if they do have to face Coastal Carolina in a three-game set, which would begin on Saturday night, they better be worried. They're going to be, they may not admit it, but they will be scared, and because of that, they will respect Coastal Carolina because it's all on film now, Christian. It's all out there. There's no sneaking up with Coastal Carolina. They're not just going to be, oh my God, that team's kind of good. Not anymore. They did that in Auburn. They did that in Plainsman Park. They're not doing that anymore, and they are very capable of beating either Arkansas or LSU. And I'll tell you what else is capable of happening. That's Arkansas beating LSU twice. That's hard to do, but it's very capable of happening. But LSU's really, really good. I mean, they're here for a reason. And it just goes back to the fact that those two teams had to play in the first round of the College World Series in Omaha. It sucks, I know, but it shows how important that game was, doesn't it? It shows how important game one is, because look at the upper hand that LSU has. You're not going into tonight thinking, oh, well, if we win, cool, but if not, we have tomorrow. They're going to try and win tonight. But if, you know, if it just hits the fan, they do have tomorrow to lean back on.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned it. Game one was so important. Arkansas was a little bit of a better favorite to win that game and mm-hmm. to win the entire College World Series. Now with LSU in the driver's seat, their betting odds have almost become even, if not right around that, simply because
as of right now?
You mentioned it, because wow. you have that two-game buffer, or at least to make it to the College World Series, and yeah, arguably to win it, because then you would get a little bit of day, you get some days off. You would imagine that the starters would go, and how absolutely fantastic of a matchup would it be if it was Cade Anderson and Jacob Morrison in game one of the College World Series?
Ooh.
Or I mean, if you're Coastal, you would be the away team doing what you did to start Omaha and going your 2 and your number 3 in the same game,
yeah.
and then using Jacob Morrison in game 2 to where all of a sudden you're the home team trying to steal it in 2.
That was the super strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they did here. And
why
it
stop
worked.
It?
If it ain't broke, right? I mean, Coastal just has a swag, man. They're good and they know it.
They do. And they're position-wise would be considered an underdog or a Cinderella story.
Sure.
But you feel like, at least a little bit, and this might be just speaking from personal experience more than taking it the wide landscape of everything. Man, there's great baseball everywhere. And I don't feel like the word Cinderella carries as much weight in baseball because you play so many games
right.
to where it's not the we have to rely on scoring 80 points a game at the college basketball level, or we have to go and find a way to stop this quarterback and their 4 receivers on the football side of things. Baseball just weighs a little bit different, and you feel like the term Cinderella doesn't mean as much. And for a team that's as good as Coastal Carolina is, with a head coach that is fantastic, a pitching coach that I'd be surprised if he's there for too long just because of how fantastic he is, and you have a couple of guys on your staff, on the starters, the rotation, and in the bullpen that I have a feeling you're going to see at the next level.
Well, I feel with baseball, it's a really interesting point, because with baseball, because you do play so many games and there are so many factors and everything is so statistical, right? We talk about in football and basketball all the time, the luck factor, right?
Sure.
That doesn't really get talked about in baseball a whole lot. Not saying luck isn't a part of it, because it is. There's always luck in sporting events, but baseball is so analytical and so repetitive and so not predictable, but it is what it is.
It follows the numbers. You talk all about it, that the numbers tell a lot but don't tell the whole story.
Right.
In baseball, it weighs a little bit more towards the numbers because it's yeah. so analytical, rather than, yeah, like you're talking about the Isaiah Evans game.
Sure.
For Duke against Auburn. Nobody predicted something like that. In baseball, it's, dang it, we predicted Jacob Morrison to go 5 1/3. Instead, he goes 7.
Right. You don't luck into a win in baseball, is what I'm saying. More times than not. Can you get luck in an inning? Sure. Can you get luck in a stretch? Absolutely. But across a series, across a weekend, across several weeks or a month or whatever, you don't luck into a good season in baseball or a good couple of weeks in baseball, whereas you talk Cinderella so much with the college basketball tournament.
Yes.
When you see those 10 seeds or the 12 seeds or the 16 seeds, not saying they were lucky that they won, but it took luck for them to win. It's just not as much of a factor in baseball is what I'm trying to say, which yeah. is why what you're saying is for Murray State or for Coastal or whoever you want to pick on here, they're there because they're good. And that's what Coastal is showing, that you can go and be a 55-win team, which is what Coastal is right now. 55 wins on the season. We said this yesterday. I don't care if you're playing T-ball at the Y. 55 wins is ridiculously good. It is super, super talented. And you don't fake that. You don't luck into that, which is why Coastal Carolina is about 5.5 innings away from playing for a national title.
It's crazy to think about this Coastal Carolina team about halfway through conference play was 30-11. Still pretty solid. I don't think too many teams would be unhappy winning just about 3 out of every 4 games. Then you look at it a couple months later, you're 55-11. thanks to a 25-game win streak. And unless something changes, you're bringing 26 straight W's into a best of three set.
That's strong.
You can't fake that like you're telling.
It doesn't lie,
especially
man.
Not in a series or in a regional or in a super regional or against a team like Arizona or a team like Oregon State or a team like Louisville. You can't fake stuff like that. Not that you can fake it in other sports, but you can't fake it in baseball.
Right.
Is what it's we're just, trying to tell
it's
you.
It's just different. It is.
This
it's just
team
different.
Is 100% determined. And we hear so many teams talk about it at the beginning of the year of, well, our mission is a national championship. Our mission is the college football playoff. Our mission is to go to Omaha or
some
go to San Antonio or a bowl game. But this Coastal Carolina team, you can tell, had that mindset, that mission, and many people wrote them off. Many people laughed at them. And now all of a sudden, they're still playing in front of a packed house at Charles Schwab.
Somebody texted in, believe it's Eric in Auburn, at 334-784-1067. That is the On the Line text box number. Send us your thoughts in there. He says, Coastal has mojo. They feel invincible. LSU, in his opinion, is the only team with enough pitching depth to give them a series. And if you are Coastal, and hang on here, clearly you are cheering for Arkansas tonight to force that winner-take-all game tomorrow. At that point, then you can, pick your poison on whether you want to play Arkansas or LSU. But
yeah, which lefty 98-mile-an-hour do you want to face?
Right. I mean, they're both really good, obviously. But that's fascinating. But then he says this. Wouldn't it be weird if, and he's talking about Auburn here in this moment. He says, wouldn't it be weird if our basketball and baseball teams were both eliminated by the eventual champions? Auburn being knocked out in the Final Four by Florida, and Auburn baseball very easily could have been knocked out by what is an eventual national champion in Coastal Carolina. I mean, says a lot about where Auburn was with basketball and baseball. I mean, Auburn losing in the Supers and what is considered a Sweet 16-ish, and then Auburn basketball losing in the Final Four, but doesn't make it any less painful, but maybe a little bit more understanding, I guess, if you lose to the team who goes on to win. I think we've had this conversation before. Do you want the team that beats yours to go on and win it, or do you want them to lose immediately to make yourself feel better?
Is that the first halfway middle ground Jabba?
Ooh.
Where you're actually sitting there and it's like, oh, well, it's Jabba. However.
Right. I mean, for Auburn,
I
would rather that team go on and be successful rather than Coastal coming in, beating Auburn 2-0 in the Super, and then just getting 2 and barbecue in the College World Series. So this one feels a little bit better, I think, from the respect factor. You respect what Coastal has done. You have to. It's impossible not to.
They walked into your place and did it in 2 games. You can't do anything but have respect.
Yeah, tip your cap, man. Tip your cap, and they're about to play for a national championship. What else do you want? And you could say the same thing about Florida basketball with Todd Golden. I mean, half this fan base wants him to be the next coach here. What else do you do but tip your cap?
After,
pat him on the behind. Say good job, brother.
After walking into your home and doing it in the regular season.
Yeah.
And then doing it again in San Antonio. It hurts to think, as we had the break here, I don't want to say this because there's a lot more factors that go into it, but you're a stop. If that Miles Kelly transition three goes in with about 2 minutes left, you take the lead and get that stop.
Yeah.
And a sacrifice bunt away.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. There's a lot more plays than that, but that's what it feels like looking back. And, you know, you were only about 18 to 20 plays away from Auburn making a bowl game last year, if you think about it. So, I mean,
if that.
If no, that. You were literally like one play away from beating Oklahoma if you don't throw a pick six. God, do we really want to go down that road today? I don't think we do.
I'm going to turn your mic off.
Yeah, we'll spare you that as we head to break and maybe let you.
I started show number two by playing the Tuesday show by playing the prayer of Jordan Hare and the kick six. And this is how you come on Wednesday?
I mean, look, man. I got to make up for lost time, man. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line. Get on in. We would love to hear from you. We'll talk a little bit more baseball on the college side and then Major League Baseball updates as well. We got college basketball later on in the show. We'd love to hear from you. We're off and running here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 and an update from the College World Series. Top of the fourth, it is 6-0 Coastal, where they are beating Louisville at the moment. Again, the Cards have to win two games today. Well, sorry, two games in general. One would be today. They would play the other one tomorrow. Where the winner of this series moves on to play in the College World Series final. And so a couple of games that happened yesterday, though, that kind of got us to this point. We knew that the UCLA-LSU game from Monday had to carry in and finish up early yesterday morning. Arkansas, I think they did about what I said they were going to do. They just wore down UCLA. They out-hit them 10-6. Did have three errors in the field, though, that UCLA took advantage of some, just not enough, Christian. But Arkansas just wore them down on the mound, 7-3 Hogs, to get them to the game that they're going to play tonight, which is against LSU, where they have to win two games to move on to the championship series.
Yeah, you mentioned that just kind of wore down the Bruins team, and that really helps when you have your Arkansas starter go the distance.
What was the stat yesterday that UCLA had used, like, it was like six nine or, pitchers in yes. the game before, and Arkansas was, used one?
That was where I was going yeah, to. Yeah, it's the stupid. Fact that they used, I think it was eight in eight innings.
Gosh.
And again, some of them only threw seven, eight pitches, but you did everything that you could to get to that point, playing from elimination. Arkansas ends up making it they with their win 7-3. And this Louisville team, man, you feel like it's kind of the same story of this Coastal team now can just grind out the Louisville team, just kind of ride through their waves of momentum, because the fact that they're still playing baseball, you feel like, is partial success, partial surprise, but then also partially just Oregon State not being able to do whatever they needed when things got tough. I mean, this Louisville team had a very costly error in the top of the ninth inning that tied the game at six for Oregon State. You then had runners on second and third with nobody out in a tie ball game, feeling like Oregon State has all of the momentum. Somehow, you only give up that three spot. You take it to the home half of the ninth. You get bases loaded with nobody out and a sac fly to win it. But, man, we had written Oregon State off about halfway through the game with the one run in the sixth and one in the seventh to extend the lead for the Cardinals. Then all of a sudden you got tie game, two runners in scoring position, and after an error like that, you figured there's no way this could be an eight spot for Oregon State. Instead, Louisville finds a way to get out of the jam, end up walking it off in the ninth, again with that sacrifice fly, but it's kind of one of those stories of you do everything you can to make it to the next day, but when the team is rested, I mean, how many times do we see that in the old school SEC tournament in basketball, where just the teams that get that that rest just can sit there and wear down any sort of defense or any sort of momentum that the other teams have? You feel like Coastal's doing that right now with Louisville.
Yeah, they are, and look, this is a great story for Louisville. They're making a little noise here in the fourth, and you got to take advantage. You got a runner on second, nobody out. But it's been a fun ride for them. And look, this is a Louisville team, man. Look at their record. I mean, they're 38-21, which is fine, but not great. But they were one of those several ACC representatives in the tournament as a whole. The one team from the ACC that made it to Omaha. And so we were kind of talking about this a little bit earlier, the fact that everybody talked crap and poked fun at the SEC. But again, you're going to have an SEC representative in the College World Series final. The best of three series, whether it's LSU after winning one game tonight or Arkansas after winning tonight and tomorrow, the SEC, yet again in college baseball, will be playing for a national title. And I think LSU and Arkansas were good bets at the start of this thing, but could have been Vanderbilt, could have been Texas, could have been Auburn. I mean, there were a lot. Georgia was in there too. I mean, think about all the teams that didn't make it this far who could have gone on to play. Tennessee was an example too. I mean, the SEC had some really good teams this year, and I'm glad, even though I don't particularly like LSU or Arkansas, I do like that the conference is still going to have a shot to win it all.
That's all you can ask for, right? And you feel like even if it happens where whoever they end up playing, if that's Coastal Carolina, if Coastal takes it in two or three, you wouldn't say that the SEC underperformed. You would just give all of the credit to the Chanticleers, to Coastal Carolina, just because when you make it to Omaha, even if you make it to the Super Regionals, you're throwing all of the statistics, everything out the window, and it would simply be a tip your cap to what could be the best team in college baseball. A bunch of teams and a bunch of casual fans just didn't know a whole lot about this team until the postseason actually hit.
Yeah, so we'll give you updates from what's going on in the College World Series. Again, Coastal leading Louisville 6-0, where the Cards have to win two games today, or two games in total, one game today, one game tomorrow. Cards have a runner on second. There was nobody out. They struck out that time, so there's one away. And then LSU and Arkansas is coming up tonight. And hey, by the way, when we do get to the College World Series final that begins on Saturday and it runs Sunday, the if game on Monday, we're going to have that radio broadcast for you right here on ESPN 106.7, the national radio broadcast of the College World Series final. We'll have it for you Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday, if needed, we'll be right here on ESPN.
Riley Eichhoff, the starter on the mound for Coastal Carolina. He's faced 14 batters and 13 first-pitch strikes. Best pitch in baseball is strike one, and I would say the score is telling that story right now.
I would say so. So we'll give you updates from that, and I guess we're just kind of working through our own baseball power hour because lots of Major League Baseball updates to talk about when we come back. And somebody asked me about the Red Sox and how I feel. Have they been doing anything recently? We'll talk about them, the Braves, and a whole lot more. We're 30 minutes in to hour number one.
Are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us on this June 18th here in the middle. God, we're halfway through the month of June, man. We're halfway through the month of June.
Wasn't it just February?
Yeah, I believe I remember celebrating New Year's last week, I think. And look, I was looking at the calendar. You have this week, all of next week, and then it's 4th of July week. Think about that. We were just looking at the baseball schedule. We're almost halfway through Major League Baseball season. Like, I don't know, man. Time flies when you're getting old or having fun or whatever they say. Speaking of baseball, there's a lot to talk about in Major League Baseball, which is where we go now. And love to get your thoughts if you have opinions on the Braves, on storylines. Ohtani had his first start the other night. There was also some drama with him in the batter's box the other night. Was that last night, I think?
It was last night.
There's a lot going on around Major League Baseball, so give us a call, 334-321-1390. You can always shoot us a text in the On the Line text box as well, which is 334-784-1067. And I think it's only appropriate that we start there because someone asked me, they said, hey, Jacob, as a fellow Red Sox fan, how do you feel about the Rafael Devers trade? And if you haven't seen this, it has not saying this because I'm a Red Sox fan. I think it is the biggest story in baseball right now that the Red Sox just up and decided to trade Rafael Devers, who has been in Boston for quite some time now. I mean, we're not talking about a rookie anymore. We're talking about a dude who's been there for, six, 7 years now? And so there's been a lot of reports and things that there were some rumblings and there were some disagreements and things between Devers and the front office and the coaching staff with the Red Sox about where he should play or if he should play in the field or if he could be DH. Like, there was a lot of controversy there. So, the Red Sox just said, you know what? We're done. And they traded him to San Francisco for some peanuts and a you know, box of chocolates. Expired chocolates, by the way. And so, it was random. Just completely, just out of the blue. Red Sox trade Rafael Devers to San Francisco. Red Sox get some pitchers and some prospects. It was bad, okay? I don't like the Red Sox trading away good players. They've done it several times in my lifetime. Several times. And for whatever reason, we decided to send him to the West Coast, right? Mookie Betts was the last one. I didn't like seeing him go, but clearly there was an issue here. Clearly there was some beef between Devers and the Red Sox.
Sure.
But it turns out, and I'm not saying that I am, or the Red Sox are just perfect. Turns out that it was probably a two-way street. It was probably on both sides here. So I understood why they did it. I wish they would have gotten more. Did you see these reports that the Red Sox reached out to the Braves?
I did, yeah.
And were asking for several pieces from the Braves, who were thinking about it and then called and said, yeah, we thought about it, we're okay.
Yeah, the Braves were in that conversation. I believe either the Cardinals or the Mets were in that conversation as well, but nobody, it said, was as excited or as willing to jump on board as the San Francisco Giants were. And you feel like, yes, although you give up Kyle Harrison, you give up Jordan Hicks, and then you give up again your first round pick last year and I believe another double A prospect right now, you still feel like that's a win for the Giants in a weird way.
I think so.
Versus it being, yeah, if it was going to be for the Braves, it was okay, you're going to give us three or four solid pieces. And so
I think Marcell Ozuna from the Braves was going to he was in that deal as well, right?
Probably, but he's actually okay with being the DH, so he would have been he would have been perfectly fine. He probably would be a good piece in Boston with the Monster. But
honestly, yeah, I think he was in that.
But from what he did last night, I'm still happy that he's an Atlanta Brave for the time being. But no, it is. It's a very interesting story, and you hear a lot more of it from the player side of things because the players are more likely to lash out, be emotional about it. The organization doesn't really give anything other than those official press release statements. But everything just continues to grow, and even more so with Devers in his first interview, wearing the jersey, wearing the hat in the Bay, asking him, Rafi, I know that there was some confusion or disagreements on playing third base, possibly moving over to first base, or even DHing. Have you had any sort of communication on what your role is going to be for this team? And that was basically the exact same question that Devers was asked in spring training. And his response was, no, I play third. I play third base. That's where my home was. You fast forward to yesterday afternoon, and it was, my job is to give 100% of my efforts for this team. I've talked with the coaches, and I'm willing to go wherever that they say that I need to play.
It just grinds my gears, man. It just makes me so furious to hear that. And he said it for several reasons. Let's not kid ourselves here. He said it to get under the skin of Boston.
It was not just 100% genuine.
No, he said that to just one more little dagger right at Boston, at the front office, at everybody in the organization of, oh, well, you treat me like crap, that's fine. I'll give all my 100% to a team that really wants me here.
That being said, for the Red Sox, and despite your beliefs, we're not going to spend the entire segment on the Boston Red Sox. But, man, I mean, opens up a lot of space, opens up a lot of money, considering the Boston Red Sox did not have to do anything. The Giants just
took on
every single dollar. But, it's just a crazy story, considering 2 years ago, Devers in Boston said, you know what, we're going to link arms. You're going to be the face of this franchise. We want you here for the next decade, maybe even forever. And how quickly did that crumble to the ground?
Yeah, we've seen this story before in Fenway Park, believe me. So, yeah, my thoughts really quickly are good riddance at this point. I mean, finally picked up his first hit yesterday, RBI double. He's going to be good out there. He is. He's going to be good out there. Funny enough, Red Sox go to San Francisco this weekend. I wish it was the other way around, but that's just, you know, we couldn't be that lucky. So, good riddance to him. Boston's going to be a 500 ball club until I die, probably. So, we won the World Series in 2018. That's all I can ask for. And so, there are other storylines, though, around Major League Baseball. Tons of storylines. I mentioned Ohtani a little bit ago, who got his first start on the mound since 2023, where he didn't pitch very long, but he at least was back out there on the mound. Did it surprise you, Christian? Did it surprise you to see Shohei Ohtani pitching again in the major leagues? Because for me, I thought he was done. I thought he would never pitch another game, and I thought that was the smart thing to do for him, especially for somebody who is such a good hitter, who's such a key piece in the batter's box. I was surprised that he decided to start pitching again, and he did the other night.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely wanted to, and Dave Roberts has mentioned a couple of times that if he says that he's good to go, he would love to go. I would not be too surprised if maybe not this year or over the next 2 or 3 years he stays in that starter role, but I could very much see him kind of being one of those close pieces, either a bridge guy or a guy that can go in and get you a six-out save if needed, or just come in from right field and pitch three innings. That way you still get value from him, because that was, realistically, that was the contract that he took on, was because of what he did, it was to be that two-way guy.
Right.
Obviously, when he signed, that was not the case, because when he was injured with the Angels, but the hope was still to be able to get him onto the mound. And other than maybe a tick or two of velo, I mean, from the one inning you saw, yes, did give up one hit and one run to the Padres in that outing, but that was told, Robert said multiple times, that was going to be the only inning that he pitched. I don't think it's too bad. I don't think he did anything that was overly surprising, and I would not be surprised if they try to find a way to continue to increase his limit, or almost either, again, let him be that bridge or possibly be a guy that goes 1, 2, and 3, and then you allow somebody like that to work your way, like a starter, try and get you 6 through 8, and the closer gets you 9.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. And I know, like you said, that's why they signed him, and that's why they paid him a stupid amount of money, like stupid with SH amount of money, right?
Not right now, actually.
Well, initially, but it's just
in 10 years when he doesn't have that contract.
Right. And dude, it's such a genius move to sign. Cuz yeah, what's he making year for year? Yeah, I was going to say like 1 or 2 million a year, but then when
in California
retires,
it's like 600,000 after that.
Yeah. You know, and he's probably saving money now that dude's not betting it away on the side. but yeah, when he retires, then he's going to make some like what, like 10 million
it's 10
a year
for
or
the next, yeah.
So smart. I don't know. I just thought it was surprising to see him pitching again because of how good he is just hitting the baseball and how less demanding it is on your body to just be a hitter and sure, be in the field rather than what we see now with so many pitching injuries and surgeries and things like that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a good point. But with the Shohei Ohtani rule that MLB has implemented, it makes it a little bit easier. That was established before his year when he was injured with the Angels, but basically making it to where he can start. Because usually, if you don't use a DH or your pitcher's your DH, you burn him. You also burn the DH, and that comes into the spots. But he can now start on the mound and then move into the DH spot,
yeah,
without anything being ruined with the lineup. And so that was what you saw. A couple of nights ago, you mentioned a little bit of drama last night after the Dodgers hit Fernando Tatis. The Padres immediately respond with hitting Shohei Ohtani, which last night was 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts. I think that's only the second time that's happened in his career. And don't quote me on that, but I think I saw something about it. But yeah, I mean, it's absolutely.
And then Dave Roberts got ejected.
Yes. I mean, you feel like that's one of the, you have to.
You absolutely
You have to come to bat for your guys. After Tatis was plunked, that should have been, if it was not, that should have been the warning to both sides. But mm-hmm. You're starting to see baseball get back to the, I don't care about the warnings, what eye for an eye. And again, Roberts, you feel like, has to get ejected if your guy gets plunked like that. You're talking about the Red Sox and how they are sellers, essentially, with Devers, whether they're going to sell anybody else. I've heard so many rumors about Duran now, possibly, in the conversation.
I've seen stuff about Bregman, too, whether they should pick up the remaining parts of his contract. I mean, I don't know, man. Boston's in shambles.
Yes, and we talked with Lindsey Crosby plenty of times, and he even said that he would not be surprised if the Braves became sellers at the trade deadline, trying to open up a little bit of space for whether that be next year, whether that be to, I don't know if I can bold or italicize my language, but extend Ronald Acuna? Just a thought in there.
Do you think they should do that? Do you think he's good enough?
Would say that since his injury, and even before his injuries, I would say that he is playing halfway decent.
I don't know. He's kind of looked a step slow since the injury. You may just want to go ahead and dump him and just I wouldn't take the risk.
Slow from the standpoint of stolen bases? Yes, I would agree because that's not his role right now. But when you get on base, almost 60% of the time. I mean, last night's stat line was just stupid. 1 for 2, 2 walks, 2 runs, and an RBI. Like, it's absolutely insane. And the play that he made in right field to double up Juan Soto.
Awesome.
The Braves.
More on Juan Soto than Acuna, I think, just because Soto, as the broadcaster said, Soto didn't know where the ball was.
Yes.
He got caught. He had no idea. He was looking back and looking for a sign. He was looking for somebody to give him a heads up. And then he just, now, hell of a throw from Acuna, but.
And heck of a play as well with that wall and the bricks in right field. But, man, that makes you just as happy as in the batter's box, because that shows you that the agility and everything, the explosiveness, and obviously the arm talent is still there. However, after being down 4-1, Marcell Ozuna ties it with a 2-out, bases-clearing double in the 8th. After having the bases loaded, nobody out, you literally sat there and thought, this is the story of the Braves. This is the season of Atlanta, and everybody was about to crash out and just lose their absolute minds. But Marcell Ozuna comes through, rips a double down the left field line. They go to extras. Austin Riley with one of the weirder sack flies that you'll ever see, because the center fielder for the Mets ran into the wall making the grab with nobody out. And so hopefully you didn't need a hit from Austin Riley if you were dabbling in anything like that. But this morning, or it might have been last night, I believe it was this morning, though, Alex Anthopoulos, the GM for the Braves, basically walked into 680 The Fan, which is their little promotional site at the Battery, and said that we will not be selling. He said, you can bold that word, you can italicize that, you can quote it right now, we are not selling. Talking, I think Chris Sale was the topic of conversation of, with Chris Sale pitching as well as he had, former Red Sox, would you be willing to trade Chris Sale to open up a little bit of space? And he basically walked in and said that quote, that we are not selling, followed it up by saying, in fact, paraphrasing, in fact, I'm trying to work out a trade right now to prove to everybody that we are not selling. We are looking for a big piece right now to prove to you that this season does still matter. And man, that tells me that Ronald Acuna is the best player, I think, in Major League Baseball. Because the Braves were caught in the water, had no emphasis on anything.
Right.
And now you're having team meetings. Austin Riley has talked about it plenty of times, of the conversations that have needed to been had have been had between players. And you can see Ronald Acuna Jr. coming back has sparked the offense, has sparked the energy. And you hope that a win like that and then some quotes like that from Alex Anthopoulos can slowly turn things around.
Well, don't look now. I mean, back-to-back series wins, and the Braves are off to a good start against New York. Speaking of Chris Sale, it is Sale Day tonight. He'll be going against the Mets. They'll be throwing Blackburn, and then Strider will be going on Thursday before the Braves head to Miami and then head back to New York before they come home and play the Phillies. And my thing on that, I know we got to get to break. My thing on that, if you are going to go out and say, we're not selling, I'm working on a trade to make this happen to where the season's not over, you're still 7 games under 500. I believe you're 12 games back right now in the NL East. What type of player do you go and get that turns that around? What type, who do you get? And I'm not saying we have to name him right now, but if you're going to do that, that dude's got to be good. He's got to be legit. A serious difference maker, because yes, the Braves are playing good. They've won 2 series in a row and could get another one tonight. But even so, you would still be, what, 11 games back, 10 and a half games back? Still would be 6 games under 500, and we're almost halfway through the season. We've seen plenty of teams get hot down the stretch. No doubt about it. The Atlanta Braves are a perfect example. But if you're going to make that sort of a statement, it better be good. And you better get somebody who makes a serious difference in Atlanta.
Marcell Ozuna, Alex Verdugo, Raisel Iglesias are the three players that come to mind talking about pending free agents. So you would think that those would be the names on the chopping block. And man, I know that it's been, I heard a little bit of it early, but now that you have a couple guys like Nick Allen that are playing really well at the shortstop spot, it makes it a little bit tougher. But you need a high contact, low strikeout kind of guy. There's a guy like that that just cut his hair that plays in Toronto.
Ah, you're saying go get him, huh?
Go get Bo Bichette.
Go get him. Okay, we got to take a break. We'll come back, and we have a question in the text box about the WNBA. Yes. pretty big storylines going on in that league right now. We'll talk about that as we wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Christian just discovered something or just came up with a name that the Braves need to go after.
Just trying to sit here and talk about Braves need an arm. Their rotation is good. They need depth, but Grant Holmes, Schwellenbach have played really well. Now that Strider's coming back healthy, it makes you miss Max Fried that much more.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would probably be one of the better rotations in baseball. But you need some relievers. And again, I think a shortstop. And if you're not going to go out and get somebody like Bo Bichette, man, like an Ezekiel Tovar for the Rockies. Or even a Ryan McMahon, and you find a way to move Ozzie to short. Somebody,
yeah, I like McMahon a lot.
Like that, but yeah. It cannot be after a statement like that, which is what you were getting to. It cannot be that we will not be sellers. We're actually trying to go get a couple guys right now. It can't be oh
yeah.
That's who you traded Raisel Iglesias and Marcell Ozuna for. Mm-hmm. It needs to be either full on right now. You push for this season, or at worst, you sign a dude for 3 or 4 years and you know that you have him locked up for next year when Ronald Acuña is re-signed and fully healthy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You either make a push or just cash it all in together. And so we'll see what happens with the Braves. Also, other storylines around Major League Baseball. And coming up in hour number two, we're talking a lot of college basketball as national championship odds are out, Auburn's SEC opponents are out, and we got a text about the WNBA. We are going to mention it because there's some drama going on with some serious physicality, borderline fighting in the WNBA, and whether they're going to allow it or rein it in. All of that is coming up in hour number two. Don't you dare turn that radio dial.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway in hour number two. And shocker, it's raining again. There it goes. It has rained every day, I feel like, just on and off. Enough to make it hot, humid, and just ruin your plans. But good thing is, radio is inside. We are getting underway in hour number two. We had a untraditional baseball power hour in the first hour. It was me and Christian, and we talked about the College World Series from Omaha, kind of gave our picks and kind of what we think could happen today and tonight and tomorrow. Also went through a lot of big storylines around Major League Baseball with the Atlanta Braves, with my Boston Red Sox, who are actually in the headlines. They are in the news. I didn't just make it up. Shohei Ohtani, and a whole lot more. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can go back and catch it with the podcast, which is on our station website, again, at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, a whole lot of basketball talk for you. We got the national championship odds for college basketball for this upcoming season. Where does Auburn rank up and the odds. Where does Auburn rank up against a couple other of these SEC teams that are heavily favored and did a fantastic job, spent a decent amount from their wallets in the transfer portal side of things? Where do the Auburn Tigers rank up against some of those teams? Also going to give some of our deeper breakdowns on some of those SEC teams. Some of the rosters like Alabama, like Florida, like Ole Miss, maybe Kentucky in there as well. As we don't want it to be mid-November when you have to remember, oh, that's who's on that team. He plays for Kentucky now. I totally forgot about that. So a little deep dive into what some of these SEC rosters are going to look like next year. And then, as we mentioned in hour number one, Auburn basketball's home and away teams, their schedule has been released. And where does Auburn go? Who does Auburn host? And a couple newbies in there as well, where Auburn will make their first trip and will host the team for the first time. But again, all of that here in hour number two. And before we get into content in the second hour, we want to remind you that hour number two is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at the orthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them for sponsoring the second hour of our show here each and every day on ESPN 106.7. Christian Griffin, Jacob Goins with you in the studio. And I know we're going to get to some national championship odds, but first we got to head to the text box, which is always open at 334-784-1067. If you want to just send out a quick thought, a quick text, we'll more than happily read it and respond to it. 334-784-1067. The phone lines are open as well here in hour number two. If you would like to be a part of the basketball conversations as we bring to them, or any conversation, any questions that you have, again, that phone line is open. If you would like to get to us, be on the line. That's 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390.
Yeah, we get to the text box where somebody asked us late in hour number one. They said, the WNBA and the physicality and borderline fights, will the officials rein it in, or is it just marketing? And if you are unaware with what is happening, shout out to, and I'm serious about this, shout out to the WNBA for the growth that they have seen.
Sure.
Caitlin Clark has been a major reason for that, but there are several really good players in the WNBA.
The game itself has grown a lot.
And there are several reasons why it has grown. But in case you haven't seen what's going on in the league and really has caught fire over the past couple of days, the physicality has gone crazy in the WNBA, but after the whistle. There's a whole lot of feuding going on. There's a lot of physicality. There's a lot of pushing and shoving. We had a girl last night grabbing the hair of another girl from behind and was yelling at her, do something about it. Do something about it. I mean, just getting it. They're going after Caitlin Clark. They're going after everybody, man. Tensions are at an all-time high right now in the WNBA, and I think this is a fascinating question. Are they going to rein it in? Are they going to do something about it, they being the WNBA? Or will they quietly sit back and let all this happen as long as nobody gets hurt? Because brings in views, brings in engagement, it brings in people to their sport, which is growing at a rapid pace. I think it's a very fair question.
I think it's very fair as well, and you feel like, as boring as it is, you feel like it's a little bit of both, the answer to that question, because yes, all of these, the clicks and engagement, and that's building tensions, that's building rivalries. I mean, that is what college and pro sports have been built on the men's side of things for as long as you can remember. I mean, you go back into the 80s and look at some of those big time rivalries where elbows were being thrown and crotch shots every single time the referees turned around. That's how college football, I mean, you think of Miami and Florida State back in the day, you think Auburn, Georgia, you think Ohio State, Michigan for the locker room and everything that happens on the field. I mean, the physicality and the pushing, the shoving, the fighting, if that's where it gets to, builds animosity, it builds intensity, and that's what builds revenue and ratings and everything like that. So you feel like from that standpoint, it's not necessarily as negative. We've seen a lot about it over this past year and now into this year. I mean, the biggest storyline being the Angel Reese versus Caitlin Clark, specifically talking on the court here. But again, two of the better players in the league who played each other in college had that rivalry transition into the WNBA. That place now sells out arena, or they, that those two teams sell out arenas, especially when they go and play each other, wherever that location is, because of the intense rivalries. However, I feel like you've gotten a little bit into it from the standpoint of, you mentioned all of the after the whistle stuff, and it's becoming where it's going to, you don't want to say it like this, but it's going to take somebody getting injured from something like that,
yeah,
or it's going to take somebody suing the league for action to be taken, because I'm sure right now they're loving all of the clicks and the engagement and everything and the viewership, which I think we heard was the highest it's ever been. I mean, you hear so many of these games every single weekend reaching the top of the ratings ever for a WNBA game and just women's sports in general. And we heard the College World Series hit record numbers with Texas and Texas Tech. And so, I mean, we applaud every single facet of that, but you also applaud everything being done in the right way. And you feel like that's kind of the line that you're beginning to cross at this point.
Well, that's what I look at with the WNBA as an organization, because with the rapid growth that they have seen over the past 3 years, I would say, there have been several instances where the WNBA has not handled it properly.
Sure.
They have proven to the world at times that they were not built to have this much publicity. They have proven they were not
ready for it.
Yeah, exactly. They weren't ready. They were not prepared for this. And that happens a lot. I mean, it's like somebody who is a nobody instantly becoming famous, and then they say something on the mic that they're not supposed to. I mean, it happens. But the W has shown that they were not ready for all of this.
Yeah.
And this is an example. And this is a time, in my opinion, for them to really take control of this. And you're absolutely spot on that rivalries are good for sports and competition, and fan bases getting into it, and a little bit of hatred. That's fine. But what you don't want is, yeah, I mean, just borderline fighting going on. And I think we're on the verge of that in the WNBA. But secretly, as long as the WNBA can control it, they're going to be happy about it, because more people than ever are scrolling and looking for it, interacting on social media, finding it on TV, whatever streaming service it's on. They are taking it in more than ever. So it's a really good point that somebody brought up in the text box, and we'll see what happens with it, though. I mean, it's pretty wild. So there's that. Definitely wanted to get our thoughts out on that. But college basketball national championship odds are out. They've been out several places for a little bit, but just wanted to dive into these a little bit, because several SEC teams are getting some love in early national title odds. You've got a team like Florida who's getting love to repeat. You've got, of course, Auburn and Alabama. You have Kentucky, who is just restocked and reloaded for yet another season. And so these are according to DraftKings, okay? Florida's at plus 1,600. Kentucky is plus 1,800. Arkansas plus 2,200. Tennessee plus 2,800. And Auburn and Alabama are both tied at plus 3,000 to be national champions. This ranks anywhere from 6th to, I think, like
17th.
17th, yeah. Okay. In all of the teams in college basketball to win the national championship this year. What stands out to you?
I think it's crazy that they went ahead and put Tennessee's odds with Zakai Ziegler in there. I'm just kidding.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah. Here's their odds with and without.
Yeah, they go from 15th to about 30. No, I'm just kidding. Again, Purdue at 1. Purdue and Houston tied at first for plus 1,000. Duke at plus 1,100. Michigan at plus 1,500, as well as UConn, who's at plus 1,500. And then Florida's the first SEC team you mentioned at plus 1,600. I don't think that that surprises too many people. You don't think that that Florida team, both with the team and the coach, are planning on going anywhere. Yes, you lose a little bit, but you get a whole lot back, and you get a whole lot from either the transfer portal or essentially from the NBA draft. And everything that they have done, it's a wild thought just to think how different it could be, the world of college basketball could be, if they were eliminated in the Sweet 16. They're almost a very similar situation, not from a coaching standpoint of Florida just letting Todd Golden walk, but comparable with Ohio State last year in football, where if they did not beat Tennessee or if they did not beat whoever, then you feel like the entire landscape of college football would look a whole lot different. Florida's now at that spot, and they kind of lead everything on if they did not win the national championship, if they did get eliminated in the Sweet 16, how different would everything look as Louisville's going to cut into the 8-0 lead from Coastal Carolina with an RBI double, still 8-1, but Louisville trying to make a little bit of noise in there. I also wonder, and I don't think that this is truly the case, but you feel like Auburn and Alabama are tied every single year when it comes to stuff like this, and you hope that that's not for clicks or anything like that. But again, this is why we're going to do a deeper dive into all of these SEC teams coming up. But man, you feel like Auburn tied with Alabama and behind Tennessee, behind Kansas and Texas Tech. You feel like it just doesn't make that much sense.
Yeah, I just, on paper, I feel like Auburn is better than what they're giving credit for.
Right.
But I understand the hesitancy on Auburn until they kind of see it out there a little bit. And, of course, this is the sports book. But you also have to remember that betting is about what the people bet on as well.
Sure.
And there are a lot of people who are going to look at Auburn and see, oh, well, everybody left, so maybe they're not going to be that good. And they still have some of the best odds in the country, but I don't know. There's a couple of teams here that I don't see being better than Auburn by the end of the season. Louisville, Arkansas, Texas Tech, you mentioned them. I don't see them being better than Auburn. Duke may be even in this conversation too, for my opinion. But Auburn will be better than Alabama. I am confident in that.
And that's what I mean. The fact of if Alabama was plus 3,200, it's, yeah, well, Auburn's right there. Let's just bump them up so that way it gives a little bit. I don't think that's truly how it works because they realize that money could be made or lost if that's the case. But yeah, both of these teams tied for 16th at 16 and 17 at plus 3,000. They are 5th and 6th highest odds in the SEC. You feel like one of those teams is, ironically, with how good the two programs have been with SEC basketball running through the state of Alabama over the past couple of years, one of those teams is going to overperform and almost come out of the shadows, whether that's the SEC, whether that's the SEC tournament, or in March, just because so many of these other teams are expected, at least as you mentioned, on paper, to do a little bit more than both Auburn and Alabama.
Who's the best bet that's not Purdue? Who's not the favorite? Because I'll say it, I don't believe in Purdue. I don't believe in Matt Painter. I don't believe in that entire team. I don't. Braden Smith is great. He's a really good player. But they're not a winning team. Matt Painter doesn't win big-time games
is
at
that,
Purdue.
This will be another fun conversation to do another day, but comparing college basketball to college football, is Purdue your Penn State?
Yes, they are. They're always there. They're always around, but they don't break through. They don't win the big game.
And what a great conversation that could be.
Oh, it'd be awesome. I mean, I think it's very, very similar, yes. Purdue is in that category of they're always good, they're always there, they're going to have a really good guard, they're going to have a great center who's 7 feet tall, and they're going to make a run, they're just not going to win at all. And I don't know, that's just the history of Purdue recently. But who on this list that's not the favorite in Purdue or Houston? Who's the best bet, best value to win the national championship? I mean, you can say Xavier at plus 11,000 if you want to. I wouldn't consider that good value. But who's the best value on this list? If you had to take a $100 bill right now and say, this gives me the best chance to win my money right now in the month of June on who you would bet to win the college basketball national championship, text box says UConn right now.
I say 4-6 is a pretty solid option from a coaching standpoint with Dusty May, with UConn and Dan Hurley.
That Michigan team,
and then
gonna
Florida
be really good
with Dan Hurley. Michigan would probably be up there as well. There's a team sitting in that nine spot right now, and it's the University of Kentucky.
That's where I was going
to
go.
Because I think, again, it goes to the coaching staff. That's where it starts. We saw what Mark Pope was able to do in year three quarters, essentially. I think that team's going to be really good.
That's my bet. If I had to, I would pick Kentucky right now. I just think they're that good. I think they're talented. I think they've got recruits coming in. Their portal class is good. We're going to talk about them coming up in a minute. And Mark Pope is a damn good coach. I mean, there's no way around it. He is that good. For a guy that was hired from BYU to go to Big Blue Nation and half of them said, who? He's that dude. And he's going to turn Kentucky. They were, quote, down for a couple of years when John Calipari was fizzling out before he went to Arkansas. They're going to be right. Big Blue Nation is back, man.
Well, yeah, well, it was. I wouldn't necessarily go as far to say they said who, but it was much more of the
why.
Oh, it's the is that the personality hire? You're bringing a guy back right to his alma mater. Like, is he going to be the right guy, or is he going to be that, again, that filler spot for 2 or 3 years where no coach wanted to take after Calipari, and then it's the next coach that comes in? We've had that conversation plenty of times.
Big Blue Nation didn't say who, but I think a lot of the country said
sure,
who.
Sure, yeah. It was much more of the, oh, like, that's not a big name
right
for Kentucky yet. You saw what he was able to do with the injuries that they battled all year long, and now with, again, their open chest, their open evaluation of, yeah, we've spent a lot of money on our class either this year or from the transfer portal. And you put that in with a coach like Mark Pope, you put that in with a fan base like Kentucky, I would say I would go 4, 5, 6, and 9 with Kentucky in there for if I was going to give 4.
Okay. Yeah, somebody was asking where Florida is on this list. Purdue and Houston are tied at the top at plus 1,000 odds to win the national championship. Duke would be second, technically, at plus 1,100. UConn and Michigan are tied for third with plus 1,500. Florida is in fourth at plus 1,600 to win the national title. Again, Auburn is down there at plus 3,000. So that gives you kind of an idea of what they think about Auburn. Could it happen? Sure. They're just not ready to pull the trigger on that one just yet. And we're going to talk about some of these SEC teams, the Alabamas, the Kentuckys, the Tennessees of the world. Who's on their team? Who's on their roster? And why could they be good this year? Plus, Auburn's SEC opponents have been announced. We're talking all that and more when we come back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
All right, let's keep talking a little basketball here as we are looking at some of the SEC teams going into this year, right? Teams that have some serious odds to win a national title and what they have on their roster. And this will probably carry into our bottom of the hour segment, where then we will talk about Auburn's SEC opponents and who they're going to be playing inside of Neville Arena, and also who they're going to be playing on the road. And so Auburn and Alabama have the same betting odds, according to DraftKings, to win the national title. And we both agree that we think Auburn will be better than Alabama this year. But some of you may not know exactly who is on this Alabama team. And that's okay, because in today's era of college basketball, it's hard to kind of keep up with what's going on with other teams' rosters when you're so focused on your own roster. And obviously, the glaring news for Alabama this offseason, Christian, was the idea that LeBaron Filon, who had a chance to go pro, decided he was coming back for another year in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, by far, that's the biggest news in Tuscaloosa, because for 3 weeks, it was the, yeah, I'm keeping my name in. This is what I've worked for. This is what happens, and wherever I get drafted is where I go. And then, like the majority of us at 11:57, when we decide to turn in our homework at the 11:59 deadline, came back and asked the teacher for an extension, a raise, and he ended up getting it. And so,
no.
Coach, I was joking. I wasn't going anywhere. What do you mean? What do you mean? I was gonna stay here, Roll Tide for life. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And ends up making his way back to Tuscaloosa, and you feel like he is going to be a crucial role, a pivotal role not a role player as if he might have been a little bit more of last year. He is going to serve as that Todd Pettiford type of player for Alabama next year.
Yeah, and so you look at what he could do. I mean, he'll be a starting guard. I don't know if they're going to play him at the one or the two just yet, but they do have Latrell Reitzel who's going to be playing again. He was banged up last year, and so they're going to have him playing for this team. Of course, Aiden Holloway is back for another year in Tuscaloosa. But then you start looking around at what they have. You've got Aiden Sherrell as a sophomore, one who's 6'10", 240, somebody I think that really sticks out to me, a guy that is going to be a really key piece for this Alabama squad, in my opinion. You are missing some guys like Grant Nelson, who, of course, were on the team a year ago and now transferred out. I look at Taylor Bowen, who is from Florida State, somebody who I think could absolutely be a starter for them. He was an 8-5 type of guy, 8 points a game, 5 rebounds a game for them. Also shot it at nearly 41% from three as a big man, okay, as a guy who stands at 6'10". That's pretty strong for what Alabama could put out there, maybe as a big three or maybe a good size four for the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Filon is not the primary ball handler. Him and Jalil Bethea, who is from Miami, who is arguably Alabama's best transfer portal pickup. Again, the 6'5 sophomore from Philadelphia played last year at Miami and was a very, very solid player. I think he's going to be in that rotation as well. What you do with all three of those, I'm not exactly sure. With Filon, Holloway, and Bethea, you don't think that all three would play all at the same time, because you mentioned guys like Reitzel, you mentioned guys like Aaron Sherrell, and then you mentioned a couple of the other guys that they're able to get. Noah Williamson from Bucknell, mm-hmm. or from Bucknell, is also going to be, it's a little bit more of a question mark, could play almost that that Oporum vibe for Auburn, a very similar type of guy, the 7-foot senior, but he's expected to come in and produce. And so you feel like, although some of the big time names that you've grown up, you feel like, seeing with this Alabama team aren't there, they've got some big-time pieces and big-time shoes that they need to fill. And now the question mark is, do they have enough of those guys to be able to make another year? And to be completely honest, Nate Oates is going to have them playing above their potential.
Yeah, and they've got some serious high school recruits coming in, too. And if there's anybody that can make a team look better than they are, it's Nate Oates, man. That dude can absolutely coach. And so we'll look at a couple of other teams and their rosters, the transfers, and other things that they've added in the offseason. Before we look at the opponents for Auburn this year on the hardwood in the SEC, we've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. Update from the College World Series. How about the Cardinals making a little bit of noise after they were down 6-0? Then it was 8-0. It's now 8-3. Louisville scratched across a couple of runs in the top half of the sixth inning, and my goodness, how big could those two additional runs for Coastal be? It looks like Coastal's going to have them on the corners. Just making sure he didn't get thrown out at third. Runners on the corners, bottom of the sixth, one away for Coastal. They're trying to get a couple of runs back. They're up by 5 in the game. That if Coastal wins, they move on to the College World Series final. If Louisville wins, they force a win or go home game tomorrow. And so we continue looking at a couple of SEC teams in college basketball, kind of their rosters, what they were able to do in the offseason before we talk about Auburn's SEC opponents. And you have Florida pulled up, Christian. We just talked a little bit about Alabama, and we'll do this some more as the season gets closer and things too. But what sticks out to you about this Florida team with Todd Golden, the defending national champions?
You look at and you remember, as he is going to be thrown out at third trying to stretch it from a single first and second to putting them on the corners. But I think he's going to get thrown out. The first name that you, or the first thing you look at is how many names you recognize, how many names that you know. Guys like Ruben Chinyelu, guys like Alex Condon, Han Gloten, the senior Thomas Houck, who returned. And then you go through and you look at some of these other names that they didn't play for Florida this time last year. Guys like Boogie Fland, guys like A.J. Brown, guys like Xavion Lee. It's guys like that that are going to make this Florida team really, really good.
Yeah, they're going to be really good, which is why they are tied with the fourth best betting odds according to DraftKings going in to this upcoming season. You also look at what Kentucky has on their squad as well. We were talking about them. Denzel Aberdeen, right? He goes from Florida to Kentucky. Also, you have Otega Owe returning, right? He's returning to Lexington to play for another season for the Cats and for Mark Pope. And so,
You can keep going with that team. You have Modi Abate as well. You have Jaden Quintance, the five-star power forward from Arizona State.
So good.
You have Jasper Johnson, who's the combo guard. Cam Williams is in there. Braden Hawthorne.
Malachi
who's
Moreno is the recruit coming in. He's a five-star, 6'11", 230 from the state of Kentucky. I mean, that team's going to be so good. And all they lost was Travis Perry, Walker Horn, Grant Derbyshire, and Kerr Creasa, I guess, committed to Cincinnati. So, that's pretty legit. I forgot Nate Amendt's going to be there too. Oh, never mind. He went to Tennessee. Just kidding. That Kentucky team is going to be stupid good. Just ridiculously talented. So, Auburn's going to be talented. Florida's going to be talented. Kentucky, Bama, Tennessee, Arkansas. I think Arkansas has quietly put together a pretty nice roster as well. And so, the SEC is going to be good once again. The question will be, though, what happens outside the top? What happens outside the second tier, and what can the SEC do at the bottom, right? What can the South Carolinas and the Vanderbilts and the Mississippi State, what can they do to try and get out of the rut that they've been in to kind of bring up the rear for the SEC? You hope that those teams can do it because I think that's what's separating the SEC from truly being the best conference of college basketball is trying to get the bottom tier teams to compete a little bit better.
Right, yeah, make it to where it's the Big Ten of football, you feel like. I feel like that's a decent comparison, and I would still take a bunch of the lower caliber SEC basketball teams and say that there will be a couple of them that will be surprisingly really good, and there's going to be a couple that still overperform, but just from a mental comparison, that's kind of where you're at, where the top teams are supposed to be really, really good. The bottom teams, you're not really sure what they're going to look like, and then you could throw a couple teams in that middle tier of we don't really know if they're supposed to be really good or if they're not really supposed to compete whatsoever. Teams like Texas, Oklahoma are kind of in that conversation. You expect Ole Miss to be in the middle but teetering towards the upward side just because of Chris Beard.
I expect Texas to be better. Sean Miller is a coach now.
And that's what I'm saying.
You're expecting them to be good, no doubt.
But you just don't know if they're going to compete with that upper echelon.
Sure, in year one especially.
But it makes it to where the college basketball level, we've talked about it plenty of times, throughout the entire gauntlet of the SEC might not be as much as you saw this past year. Yet that being said, the entire landscape of college basketball is going to be absolutely insane.
Well, the SEC is going to be a lot of fun this year, and we'll continue talking about the teams and the rosters and breaking them down as the season gets closer. But why don't we talk about who Auburn's going to be playing in the SEC this season? It was released today from the SEC for every team in the country, and probably more on the other teams and their schedules on tomorrow's show and maybe on Friday as well. But for Auburn in particular, we know who they're going to play and where they're going to play. We don't know exactly when this will be, how these games will stack up. More on that will come closer to the season. Do you want to start with the road games or the home games inside of Neville Arena?
Let's start with the home games.
Okay, let's start with the home games there, because you'll have a couple of repeats. Okay, we'll start with the repeat games. You're going to play Alabama, of course, home and away. You're going to play Arkansas, home and away. So you get to go to Fayetteville, and you also get to welcome in John Calipari and the Razorbacks to Neville Arena. And you're going to play Chris Beard and Ole Miss, home and away. You'll go to Oxford, and they'll come to Neville Arena. So Alabama, Arkansas, and Ole Miss inside of Neville. You're going to have South Carolina. You're going to have Vanderbilt. You're going to have LSU. You're going to have Texas, Texas A&M, and the big one, Kentucky, will be coming to Auburn this year. So your home games again for Auburn basketball in 2025, which will be 2026. Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, LSU, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Texas, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt. Christian, your thoughts.
And your thoughts as well, again, as the phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Also throw in there with the text box, 334-784-1067. Is there a team that you are very excited to face? Is there a team that you are more nervous to face at home just because of how good some of these other teams are? I wanted to start with those home teams because, again, at home, you feel like you have a whole lot of confidence. Again, it's supposed to be another fantastic team, with Auburn and Neville Arena being one of, if not the toughest place to play in college basketball when your team is at that same level. Man, really excited to see Ole Miss. Again, it's going to be another exciting game. Kentucky is going to be arguably
your second
or third biggest home game, but you feel like other than Auburn, Alabama, it's either Kentucky or Arkansas, most likely. Texas A&M could be in that conversation, but without Buzz Williams, you don't know what that Texas A&M team is going to look like, at least how they play college basketball. Excited to welcome Texas for the first time, only the third ever meeting. Again, with Auburn going to Austin and coming away with a close win there. Excited to welcome the Longhorns to Neville Arena. And again, South Carolina and Vanderbilt are on that side of the middle towards the bottom team that could overperform, but neither of those teams have overly exciting odds or expectations to compete for one of the top four seeds in the SEC.
Remember, Texas A&M not being coached by Buzz Williams because it's now Bucky McMillan. Yeah. Bucky Ball is happening in Aggieland. So curious to see how that's going to go. You nailed it. Obviously excited for Alabama and Kentucky. The Alabama game is always going to be big, and especially now Auburn trying to get revenge for what happened in Neville Arena at the end of the season. And so you'll play that team twice, of course, in Tuscaloosa and at home in Auburn. And then Kentucky at home is always fun, man. Not having to go to Rupp, even though Auburn did something they haven't done in a long time this past season, even though some people didn't get to see it.
I thought that was at Neville Arena.
And then you're going to get Kentucky again at home this season, where you also have Texas. I think that's cool. I look at the home slate, and you take away Alabama and Kentucky. I know we don't know how they stack up, but just looking at it in a vacuum, playing at home, Auburn should win those games.
They're very winnable.
Auburn should beat South Carolina, Arkansas, Texas, LSU, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt at home. That's not too crazy to ask. Split Alabama and Kentucky, and that would be, let's see, you've got 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 each. That would be 8-1.
You're saying 8-1.
I say go 8-1 in that home stretch. I don't think that's a crazy thing to ask. If Auburn is as good as we think they can be, going 8-1 in that building against those teams is not too big of an ask, in my opinion.
Even at worst, which again is not the mindset that you have, but even even if you win one of the three with Alabama, Arkansas, and Kentucky. Obviously, again, looking at it not in the vacuum, it would be upsetting, but even a 7-2 home record, you don't feel like in the SEC is anything to hold your head on. That being said, now you work your way onto the other side of the graphic.
Yeah.
And this is where you're going to need, it's Rothstein that says your nitroglycerin pills or whatever you can to...
Well, this is why I'm saying you need to win your home games.
To calm down, yes. You need to win your home ones because this SEC... We know the SEC gauntlet, but the SEC road stretch, we don't know when these are going to be placed.
Right, how they're going to stack up.
But you really hope there's not three straight.
Yeah. excuse me. You're going to have Alabama on the road, which we know. Arkansas and Ole Miss. Those are your three home and away games. So Alabama, Arkansas, Ole Miss. None of those are easy places to play. Tuscaloosa, Fayetteville, and Oxford. You also go to Stark Vegas for Mississippi State. You go to Columbia to take on Missouri. You go to Norman to take on Oklahoma for the first time. You've played them couple of times, but the last two times have been in Neville. You played them in the SEC Big 12 Challenge, and then, of course, you played them a year ago inside of Neville Arena. So, again, you go to Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Missouri, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, then you go to Georgia, Tennessee, and Florida. Your toughest road games, in my opinion, are easily Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Tennessee. That's rough. Going to Tennessee and to Florida is not easy. Heck, going to Norman and Athens is not easy. Going to Oxford's not easy. Columbia can be weird if that team plays halfway decent. We saw what they did a year ago.
Yeah.
And Auburn, when's the last time they played the hump in Stark Vegas?
I went several years ago, and we lost. The 11 a.m. game, and it was a 66-61 type of loss.
Yeah, that game was gross. And then, of course, going to Fayetteville and Tuscaloosa. So what sticks out to you about the road games for Auburn?
How I know they're going to schedule back-to-back road games being at Florida and then at Georgia or something like that, where you have to do everything you can to win on that Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening game at the Swamp, and then all of a sudden have to go right back on the road to a Georgia or to a Mississippi State type of game.
Tuesday night.
Right, on that Tuesday afternoon where, again, their fan base will be just absolutely crazy. You're having to reel in, whether it's an emotional win or an emotional victory. You just really hope, as I said, you hope that they don't schedule three in a row, especially not to the likes of a Alabama, Arkansas, and then a Florida, something like that, because it'll be something along those lines. And even with that home stretch, you're going to have one of those crazy tough situations and scenarios in there. As soon as the schedule comes out, you will be able to circle either a three or a four game stretch of holy cow.
You're going to have a couple of instances where you have back-to-back home games and then back-to-back road games. Like that's just inevitable. It just depends on how good these teams are. And then even when you take the teams out of it, I mean, the other teams are saying the same thing about coming to Auburn. It's like, man, take the team out of it. The place is hard enough to play as it is. Yeah. And I know we talk a lot of trash about Tuscaloosa and talk about how they play in the airplane hangar and they don't fill that place up most of the time. But when Auburn's there, it's crazy. It is. It's a good atmosphere when Auburn is there. Fayetteville is crazy. Gainesville is crazy. That's a place Auburn can't ever win. Tennessee is tough at times. Georgia has really stepped it up. I was there 2 years ago when Auburn went to Athens and got it done. That was the was that the Chad Baker game, or was that
who?
The CMD or CDM or BM?
you're getting close with some of those.
Yeah. Whoa. Heyo. Oxford is tough to play in. Heck, and again, we talked about Auburn doesn't play well in Starkville sometimes. I mean, taking the team out of it, those are still tough places to play in the SEC. But Auburn gets to reciprocate that with the likes of Texas or a Texas A&M and things like that. What about LSU? What a team that has just fallen off the face of the earth since Will Wade, that whole situation went down. Any chance they're better this year? Any chance that they make some noise in the SEC? People just seem to like forget that LSU basketball exists.
I think there's no way that they can't be better. This would be one of those teams that I would not be overly surprised if they played a little bit better just simply because nobody really has any expectations for them. I mean, looking at the transfer portal, you're able to get P.J. Carter. You get Markell Sutton from Omaha. You get Rashad King from NIU. You get Dedan Thomas from UNLV. So, I mean, you have a couple of these four stars that are projected to be some key contributors for this team. An LSU team will get somebody in on that Tuesday evening game when nobody's really paying too much attention to it, when we're making our predictions and it's the very first one you mention.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a game that you don't want to look over, but you hope that you feel relatively comfortable, especially again welcoming them to Neville Arena.
Is 500 on the road a favorable prediction for now in the middle of June when we know nothing about all these teams other than the names on the roster? For Auburn in particular,
a 5-4 with the nine home games, a 5-4 and a 7-2.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think Auburn can go on the road on any given year and beat Mississippi State, Missouri, Georgia, who has only gotten better under Mike White, and Oklahoma, just looking at it right now, winning those four and getting, heck, I don't even know if, Christian, I don't feel comfortable throwing Georgia in that gimme conversation. No. I don't feel comfortable doing that anymore.
If you split Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Tennessee, you beat Mississippi State, you beat Missouri, you beat Oklahoma. You take those three, and then you split those six.
That's
all of a sudden,
six and three.
Then if you're 7-2, if you go 1-2 with Alabama, Arkansas, and Kentucky and win the rest of them.
It's 13-6? My math wrong?
13-5.
You're probably not going to win the SEC, but you'll be up there. You probably have a first or
you're
double
a top
round.
Four seed.
Yeah, I was about to say, you probably have a double bye in Nashville, and you're probably a top four seed, not just in the SEC tournament. You're probably a top four seed in the NCAA tournament as well.
Which is right where Auburn was projected, being one of the top 16 teams when the final NCAA bracketology and the brackets released.
Could be a whole lot of fun. College basketball is right around the corner. We know who Auburn will play in the SEC and where they will play as well. We need to take our final break. We'll come back and wrap it up quickly here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We don't have long. We went long, but that's okay. We appreciate you being with us here on the Wednesday show. We've got a lot more coming up for you tomorrow. Probably some more basketball talk, some football conversations, also updates from Omaha as well. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC will be with us. There's a ton to talk about with him as we get closer and closer to SEC Media Days. And so we'll talk to him tomorrow. And then on Friday, we have Free for All Friday, yes, but Christian Clemente is going to be in the studio Friday afternoon for the first hour to recap what has been a busy month of June for Auburn football and recruiting as most of the official visits have wrapped up. He's been there for all of it. We'll talk to him on Friday, but tomorrow, Chris Gordy, college football, college baseball, you name it, we will have it here. On the line on ESPN 106.7. That'll be 2-4 right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. All right, so come on back tomorrow. We'll be here looking forward to it. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.